follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by life's difficulties or a traumatic experience? You are not alone. Welcome to Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving with Lisa Ferrance. Today, you'll hear from professionals and everyday people who understand the impact of life's challenges and the personal growth and newfound meaning that can come from the healing journey. Listen, pay it forward, and your life could change too. Now, here is your host, Lisa Ferrance.
Welcome. I'm Lisa Ferrance, and this is Inspired Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. I'm delighted you can join me today. In this hour, I'd like to focus on an idea that I've actually become very excited about as a clinician. It's called post-traumatic growth. And I know that a lot of you have probably heard about post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but really the majority of the show is going to be focusing on this very hopeful, optimistic concept called post-traumatic growth. So when we have post-traumatic stress disorder, this is a very chronic and debilitating condition that often occurs when a traumatic event is not fully resolved by the person. And so the survivor is left with symptoms that are either associated with numbing and avoidance of anything that's a reminder of that traumatic event. The person might present with irritability or with hypervigilance, which is always scanning the environment and watching for nonverbal communication cues to assess for a lack of safety in the world. Oftentimes you see a startle response, meaning you jump at the slightest sound or a touch or sudden movement. And many people with PTSD have intrusive flashbacks, which are usually connected to the traumatic experience itself. If you've listened to the shows in the past, you know that I've talked before about the fact that those flashbacks can be experienced visually through images, but they can also be experienced emotionally through feelings of fear or anger or terror, and they can even be experienced cognitively, like when you think, I'm trapped or I'm powerless, even if in the current situation that's not an accurate assessment of what's going on around you. And in my experience, many people also experience PTSD somatically, meaning on the body, in the form of a headache or a stomach ache or tension on the body. Those, what we would call visceral experiences, often connect to the trauma memory, the trauma experience as well. In the mental health field, those of us who work with trauma are very focused on post-traumatic stress disorder, and I think it's because so many people appear to suffer from it with varying degrees of intensity. And I can tell you, having worked with many clients who have PTSD, that it really does have lasting and dramatic effects on their relationships, on their career choices, on workplace performance. Certainly it can impact the way they parent their own children. And we even see that PTSD affects physical health and mental well-being. You may know about soldiers who return from combat who are very vulnerable to developing PTSD. And we also know that people who have grown up in toxic families where they were subjected to or witnessed physical, emotional, psychological, or sexual abuse, they may have experienced some form of neglect, or they may have witnessed domestic violence. If you've grown up with parents who had addiction issues or mental health issues, that all of those things would make us potentially vulnerable to developing PTSD. And certainly people who've experienced personal crises, including a life-threatening medical diagnosis, being the victim of a crime, experiencing a profound loss of some kind or death of a loved one, being victimized by a natural disaster or even a terrorist act, all of those things can potentially lead to PTSD. And obviously, those people who've experienced those kinds of very life-altering and traumatic events require and deserve our attention and our support. What's important, though, is that many mental health professionals assume that people who've been through those overwhelming events will automatically struggle with some form of PTSD. But again, that's not what today's show is going to be about. What I have found so exciting and encouraging is a fairly new focus that's emerged in regards to survivors of tragic circumstances. And the idea is post-traumatic growth, or PTG. And this is a concept that comes from a type of therapy and a psychological model called positive psychology. And right there, when you think about it, that name has such a hopeful ring to it, doesn't it? Positive psychology. So specifically, this is a concept that was first promoted by clinicians and researchers named Calhoun and Tedeschi in the mid-90s. And for some reason, it's actually starting to gain a lot more traction in the mental health field now. The fundamental idea behind PTG is that people who've experienced traumatic events will still initially struggle and grieve, and sometimes for long periods of time. But at some point, they're able to transform those experiences in ways that bring them to a higher level of personal growth. And this phenomenon has been studied in people who've experienced transportation accidents, natural disasters, rape and child abuse, medical traumas like heart attacks, cancer, spinal cord injuries, diagnoses of HIV or MS, brain injuries, as well as relationship traumas like divorce or death or bereavement. And in fact, what I find so exciting is that there's a post-traumatic growth inventory that can actually measure arenas in which a person can experience positive growth and change. You can Google post-traumatic growth inventory and download it for free. And it's an assessment tool for people who've experienced a serious trauma or crisis. And through a series of questions, it measures the extent to which their struggles have brought them to new levels of change in five potential areas. And I'm going to spend today's program talking with you about those different areas of potential growth and change. And they include how we relate to other people, our capacity to believe in new possibilities, rediscovering a sense of personal strength, a deepening sense of spirituality, and a newfound appreciation for life in general. And I'll go over each one of those in a little bit more depth as we talk about it. It's just an amazing and hopeful idea that when we come out the other side of something so difficult, we can actually emerge stronger, wiser, more connected to other people, more connected to a sense of self-compassion, and more grateful. So let me give you a few examples of how you might experience growth in those five areas so that this is going to start to make more sense to you. And these examples that I'm going to give you come from the PTG inventory, and they provide feedback about the extent to which you're on that post-traumatic growth continuum. So the first one, relating to others, it makes sense that relating to others would be one of the indicators of growth because so many people, in response to trauma, initially withdraw and even isolate. But as the trauma is reflected upon and processed, a shift can actually start to occur, and you might experience, to either a small degree or a great degree, things that include feeling closer to other people rather than disconnected from them, knowing that you can count on people, and actually accepting that it's okay to lean on them. In fact, you can actually reach a place of believing that human beings are inherently good and kind. You'll notice an increase in your willingness to show feelings, to express your feelings to others. And you may make a conscious choice to put more effort and energy into relationships that matter to you. And you may feel a greater sense of compassion towards other people. So I think you can hear that one of the byproducts of trauma then can be this deepening of connection and attachment to others. So it's like it's a reaching out rather than a withdrawing inwards. in the realm of new possibilities, when you're on the path of post-traumatic growth, you begin to develop new interests. And sometimes, believe it or not, those interests are actually related to what harmed you in the first place, like donating your time to speaking to kids in schools about sexual abuse if you yourself were sexually abused, or manning a domestic violence hotline if that's something that you or a loved one witnessed. You might redefine what you want to do with your life, changing the things that need to be changed. You know, the truth is none of us really change when things are copacetic and, you know, when there's a sense of homeostasis and everything is sort of okay. Change happens for us when we're in a state of disequilibrium. That's where real growth can actually occur. And so because of that, as you come through that path of a traumatic event, you might find yourself taking healthy risks that you wouldn't have taken before. I want to emphasize healthy risks because sometimes people engage in risk-taking behaviors that are destructive and not healthy. But this is really allowing yourself to think outside of the box, to kind of expand and broaden your definition of who you are and what you can do, and to broaden the possibilities that exist for you in the world. Oftentimes, survivors report that these are the kind of opportunities that would not have presented themselves were it not for the trauma, like meeting other survivors or increasing your awareness of an important cause. In my experience, it's the clients who have been through domestic violence, for example. They are the most acutely aware of the issue of domestic violence and the importance of helping people through that issue. You may find yourself in a brand new environment. And I've watched many of my clients reach this place of self-discovery, and I've seen the ways in which it can redefine and reshape the second half of their lives. In fact, many of these people contribute in ways they never would have before, and that's obviously a very exciting thing to see. I've mentioned in other radio programs that some of my clients have testified to get stricter gun laws passed after losing family members to violence. I work with sexual abuse survivors who are constantly looking for ways to pay it forward, speaking at vigils for other survivors, volunteering online to help others who are struggling, even writing books about their experiences to motivate and inspire others in their healing journeys. And I think this fits right in with the third arena, the development of personal strengths and the awareness of the existence of personal strengths. Paradoxically, although trauma survivors learn to lean on others and to ask for help when they need it, they also tap into this newfound sense of healthy self-reliance. So if you think about it, this is a very powerful move away from learned helplessness or a victim mentality about life or codependency in their relationships. When you reach a place of personal growth, you reflect back on the pain and you recognize your capacity to handle the difficulties in life. And that is actually such an empowering feeling to know that whatever life throws at you, because it's going to keep throwing things at you, that you will be able to cope with it. And many of my clients who've reached this place are able to say that they're so much stronger and they're so much more resilient than they ever realized was possible. And I do think it takes facing something very overwhelming to tap into and realize those kinds of strength, like courage and determination and resiliency. My dear friend and colleague Susan Kotcher recently gave me a wonderful book to read called Falling Upwards by Richard Rohr, who's a Franciscan priest. I love that title, Falling Upwards, because I think it says so much. And he writes about the stumbling stones in life and how inevitable and necessary it is for us to experience those stumbling stones in order to tap into our strengths, in order to move forward and to truly self-actualize on a much deeper level in the second half of our lives. And I think that there's a kind of grace that can come with this, too, as it strengthens our ability to accept that what life brings is something that we're going to be able to handle and that we're going to be able to survive, and we're even going to be able to thrive as a consequence of those vicissitudes. And this can then connect to the fourth arena, which is a deepening of our spiritual selves. And although it may feel counterintuitive, many people who come out the other side of trauma actually feel more strongly connected to a higher power. And I say that this might sound counterintuitive because it's logical that someone who's been abused or deeply traumatized by either external forces or by someone who is supposed to be trustworthy, that that person might legitimately feel betrayed by a higher power or by God. It is not unusual, and I've talked about this in other programs as well, it's not unusual for a trauma survivor to say, where was God when I was being abused? And yet, part of the criteria for post-traumatic growth is a newfound faith in a higher power, and to be able to see that higher power as an ongoing source of comfort and strength. And I've definitely seen clients reach this place when they recognize that it might have been their higher power that actually helped them to survive what it was that they experienced, or even prevented the trauma from being worse. Or they recognize that maybe having the resource of another person who helped them through that trauma was a gift from a higher power, from God. It's actually amazing to me how many people continue to believe in God during things like the Holocaust, and how so many soldiers continue to pray on the battlefield. And many people do report a deepening of their faith after surviving very horrific experiences. So when you're able to turn things over to a higher power, that's really a hallmark feature of post-traumatic growth. When you can let things go or you can put them in God's hands, this creates a kind of unburdening that is freeing, that's comforting, and it instills a sense of hope. And I think along with this reclamation can be a renewed connection to rituals, which can help give us a sense of identity beyond being a trauma survivor. When we connect to rituals and we do healthy ritualistic behaviors, it does give us a sense of identity, as well as giving us a sense of attachment and connection to a spiritual community. So it's one of the major things that we look for and we assess for when we're looking at this whole issue of post-traumatic growth is, can that trauma survivor in some way, and this can be very personal for them, but can they in some way reconnect with this notion of faith, either religious observance or spirituality? The fifth arena, which is a newfound appreciation for life, is such a powerful and such an impressive area of growth to witness in a survivor. Because when you reach this place, you truly understand the value of life. And as a consequence of that, what happens is your priorities begin to shift big time. You appreciate each day. You feel grateful for all the things that you have in your life. I think you stop sweating the small stuff. I think you recognize much more clearly where it's worth putting energy, where it's not worth putting your energy. You understand the things that you can control. You recognize all the things you cannot control. And I think that's definitely one of the things that a traumatic experience does, is it's a powerful life lesson in what we can and cannot control. And it's really a very wonderful thing to be clear about where to put our energy, what we can and can't control, what is worth, you know, being grateful and excited about, and what's worth letting go of. And my clients are able to let go of petty things and interpersonal disagreements that I think normally would have upset them for days and days. They have this amazing capacity, this new ability to understand what is and isn't important. And so therefore they can let go of stuff that's not so important. I think it's kind of a shame that oftentimes we need to get to the edge of the cliff, so to speak, and experience real tragedy before we do gain perspective about what really is and is not important. But listen, it's still a great success, and it's a life-changing paradigm when we can truly understand what matters most. I think people who achieve this can also turn over their anger and their upset feelings rather than holding on to them. I think these are the people who probably hold fewer grudges. They're more gracious about forgiving others. And I think they're also more gracious about forgiving themselves. So in general, post-traumatic growth leads to an increase in self-compassion, as well as a compassion for other people. Even potentially, believe it or not, feeling some sense of compassion towards the people who've harmed them in the past. And I've witnessed this many, many times in my work with clients. It might or might not be called forgiveness, but it is a kind of letting go. And it often comes with the realization that their abuser was incredibly limited and probably very damaged. And so they just make this decision. I'm not going to let that abusive person take up any more space in my head. I'm going to let that go. I think there's a real growth and a real grace in that when a person can get to that place. So those are the five arenas that we look for when we're doing the assessment of post-traumatic growth. I think one important point that I want to emphasize is that post-traumatic growth does not imply that traumatized people don't suffer. That's a very important thing for me to emphasize. There's absolutely a sense of pain, and there's a sense of loss. And sometimes those feelings can last a very long time. But the difference is that in time, they're able to come out the other side of that part of the journey and then move in the direction of embracing the experiences that we've been talking about. These newfound thoughts and feelings lead to a greater sense of resiliency and a strengthened ability to cope. But I want to make it clear that this is not about you jump over or you skip over the suffering or the struggling part, because everybody goes through that part of it. Calhoun and Tedeschi, the people I talked about earlier who've done the research in this field, point out something that I think is really a fascinating paradox, and that is that profound loss can actually lead us to new gains. I want to repeat that because I think it's really important, and it's completely true. Profound loss can lead to new gains. It's a very hopeful and optimistic way to think about the tragic reality of losing something, that it can also bring new things into our lives. And also, I think it's important to consider the fact that the inevitable vulnerability that certainly comes from trauma can also yield new strengths. So you've got this wonderful juxtaposition of things, that losses can lead to new gains and vulnerability can lead to new strengths. So part of this journey of post-traumatic growth comes from long-term cognitive and emotional reflection. Again, this is a process, and it takes time. We need to process all of the emotions and all of the thoughts that flow from traumatic and tragic events. First, there's always going to be a feeling of upheaval. I'm thinking about the images that have been shown recently on television depicting the damage that was done by the tornadoes in Oklahoma and in the Midwest. I'm assuming no matter where you live, you probably saw a lot of that imagery on national television. And when we look at that horrible, horrible imagery of just mass destruction as a consequence of the tornadoes, I think what we see and what we emotionally respond to is the wreckage, right? There's no way to not go there first. So we focus on the damage. We notice the losses. We may feel shocked. We may feel speechless looking at that imagery. We may get very angry. We may feel frightened just by the sheer force of it. We may feel a sense of powerlessness or being overwhelmed. I think when we look at that imagery, we immediately tap into feelings of vulnerability and feelings of helplessness. And it would be very reasonable and very legitimate if we ask, why did this happen? Or how could this have happened? And in the case of the tornadoes, we might ask, how is it possible that the same cities and the same towns got hit more than once? We might focus on what we could have done to somehow have changed the outcome in some way. I think that's very typical for people to go there because we're desperately trying to reclaim some semblance of control over something that in actuality we don't really have any control about. And we certainly, certainly focus on the loss of life, especially in this instance with the tornadoes. We think about the children in the schools who were lost, and we get stuck in the tragic unfairness of that. Some of us are going to watch those images obsessively. We may see them in front of our eyes even when the television is turned off. This is sort of gravitational pull towards those images. Others of us may avoid the news or any mention of the event because it's just too triggering for us. But my point is, I don't think that there's any way to skip over those emotions and those thoughts. Those are the normal and the inevitable responses to tragedy. So that's the first place that we're going to go. So the question becomes, how do we move beyond all of that? And what the research shows us is that there really are some specific personality traits, things like optimism, openness to experiences, extroversion, the ability to feel positive emotions, and even socioeconomic factors. All of those things definitely contribute towards the likelihood that we might eventually reach post-traumatic growth and not stay stuck in post-traumatic stress disorder. It's the process of coping with the struggle itself that leads to post-traumatic growth. My dear friend Rabbi Goldberger gives lectures to mental health professionals in my trauma certificate program, and he reminds them that when clients say, I just wish I wasn't struggling in my life. If everything was smooth and I could just figure everything out, then I know I'd be okay. And what he says about that is, it's very important that our response to our clients is, no, struggling is good. It's important. It's where growth comes from. So we want to, frankly, be less afraid about struggling. We have to kind of reframe that for ourselves. And for those of you listening who are mental health professionals or clergy persons, we have to reframe that struggling is not only an unnecessary and an inevitable part of life, but that's actually a good thing because so much growth comes out of that and flows from that. Some of you may have heard of Martin Seligman. He's a psychologist and he's a researcher and he's an author in the field of positive psychology. So he's been looking at this whole dynamic of post-traumatic growth and studying it in combat soldiers and in other people who've experienced traumatic events. And he says that another important factor in increasing the likelihood of experiencing post-traumatic growth is the awareness that it can actually be an endpoint in one's healing journey. He says that in one study he conducted, 97% of people, 97%, knew about post-traumatic stress disorder, while only 10% knew about post-traumatic growth. So when we experience trauma and we begin to feel all of that inevitable sadness, the helplessness, the anger, the depression, we're probably going to immediately think, I've got PTSD. And maybe even our therapist is also going to chime in and say, you've got PTSD. And in a way, that can become a self-fulfilling prophecy that can actually keep us stuck there. And in addition to keeping us stuck there, there are thoughts that might actually increase our negative symptoms. You know, telling ourselves, I've got post-traumatic stress disorder, is going to increase those negative symptoms and push us further down that negative spiral. However, when we normalize these initial responses to trauma, while at the same time planting the seed that we have the capacity to be resilient, we have the capacity to learn from and to grow from painful experiences, that's going to create a very different, more positive self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's going to give us something hopeful to hold on to. So even in the throes of depression and even in the throes of despair, when it feels to us like it would be impossible to walk through new doors or to walk down new paths, I think it is so important and so encouraging to be reminded that those new doors and those new paths exist, and they're waiting for us when we're ready to begin that part of our journey. And that's the part that I really want to emphasize as well, that we don't want to push people into jumping into post-traumatic growth when they're just not there. Letting them know that that can be an endpoint in the process, I think, plants that seed of hope. And, you know, I'm always telling the graduate students that I teach that when we do this work, sometimes we have the great privilege of planting the seeds, and we water the seeds, you know, metaphorically, and we put water on those seeds, and sunshine on those seeds. And sometimes, if we're lucky, we get to see those green sprouts, and we get to even see the flowers, and if we're really lucky, we get to see the whole garden. And sometimes not. Sometimes we're the ones who plant the seeds. We don't necessarily get to see the end point of that person's journey. And this just doesn't just apply to those of you who are clinicians. This is for the everyday person who is either personally dealing with a traumatic event, or you may have a loved one who is struggling in some way, trying to work their way through a traumatic experience. We don't want people to put on a happy face when it's not where they're at, but we do want them to know that it's possible for them to get there in their own time, in their own way, when they're ready. And I really do believe, because I've had clients say this to me, you know, I didn't believe you at the time when you told me that things could get better, but I really needed you to keep telling me that things were going to get better. I kind of hung on to that. I clung to that as a kind of a life jacket, you know, as a life raft in my process. And when I really felt down, I could kind of conjure your voice in my head saying, hang in there. It can get better for you. You can learn from this. You can grow from this. You can find meaning in the experience, even though in this moment you don't feel that. So I think you can hear that much of this whole concept of post-traumatic growth is based on the thoughts that we hold about our experiences and our beliefs about where we can get to, where we can evolve to in the future. So there's a guy named Stephen Joseph, who's the author of the book, What Doesn't Kill Us, The New Psychology of Post-Traumatic Growth. What Doesn't Kill Us, The New Psychology of Post-Traumatic Growth by Stephen Joseph, which I encourage you to look at if this is a topic that is of interest to you. And he reminds us that the narratives that we tell ourselves about our life experiences are going to profoundly influence the long-term impact that those events have on us. And I think the wonderfully positive message that he gives us is that we have the power to choose, and we have the power to change the narratives we tell ourselves. Now, I want to be clear. It's not that we're making up stories. We're not changing what happened. What happened is, in fact, what happened. But the way we think about what happened, the way we talk to ourselves and to others about what happened, basically with the perspective or the lens that we look at that experience through, that is something that we can choose. So when we decide to include narratives about our inner strengths or the goodness of other people or our ability to embrace new challenges, when we choose to see ourselves as resilient, or we continue to believe in the guidance or the comfort or the support of a higher power, we can actually overcome the adversities that we face, and we really can thrive. I'm thinking about one of my clients I'm working with now who's really, really struggling with depression. And as we kind of revisit the last 9 months that he's been dealing with his depression and really trying to navigate his way through depression, one of the things that I'm always inviting him to look at and think about is the story that he's telling himself about those 9 months. Now, it can either be a story of despair. It can be a story of, I don't have my job anymore. I got really depressed. I'm embarrassed about that. I isolated from my friends. I'm not the same person that I was, right? So that's a narrative that he can choose to hold about the experience. And, of course, I know that you can hear that holding that narrative is going to evoke even more distressing and depressing and upsetting thoughts and feelings, and probably, ironically, in many ways, fuel that depression, actually get it to stick around longer than we want it to. But if instead the narrative that he chooses to give himself about the depressive journey, if that included things like, I have been unbelievably resilient through a very painful, difficult time in my life, I have been determined to hang in there, I have followed through with all of the directives that my therapist has offered, I have turned to my spouse and turned to other people in my life for comfort and for support. And I recognize in so many ways that I have grown. I've become more patient with myself, much more self-compassionate. I've created the opportunity for a new job or even a whole new career path. You get the idea. That new narrative is going to lighten that person and lift some of the depression. So that narrative is so critical, you know, how we choose to see what's happening to us. So, you know, I think about many of the clients I've worked with over the years, and I have a kind of before and after picture in my mind about some of their earliest presentations in my office, and then I get to think about and even visualize where they eventually landed, even if that was years later, because I have the great privilege of working with traumatized people over very long periods of time. And I can tell you that I've seen clients start their therapy process in such a numb state, or in such a defeated state, or an enraged or profoundly depressed state. And little by little, their own inner wisdom, their strength, their courage, their optimism, and their other positive survival responses actually began to kick in. And again, I don't mean to imply that that was a quick process or that was an easy process, because really, it's not. But I have noticed that the more I focused on looking for those glimmers of post-traumatic growth, just like I did when I described to you a different narrative that I offered that depressed client, that when I gently and respectfully point out to them those moments of post-traumatic growth, even the tiniest bit of movement, then they begin to notice those glimmers too. And I say pointing it out to them gently and respectfully because it's so important to never minimize or discount or negate the very real pain that traumatized people absolutely feel and absolutely grapple with, sometimes for a very long time. We know that trauma is never a good thing. And if we had the choice about it, we would certainly want to find ways to grow while being spared horrible life experiences, right? I mean, if you ask anybody, you know, if you had to grow from something horrible and traumatic, or if you had to grow from something really positive, where would you rather grow from? Of course, the answer is always going to be, let me skip over, let me avoid the traumatic, tragic life experiences. And yet, it does seem to me, I've been a clinician for 30 years, I've worked with thousands of people, it seems to me that as long as we're alive, it's likely that we're going to experience some amount of tragedy in our lives. So when we attempt to be helpful to people who have been traumatized, I think it's really important to recognize that we're talking about a balancing act. We're talking about honoring and empathically processing those really dark places, because there are really dark places. And as we do that, we also want to balance that by continuing to suggest that there is a very real light and a brightness at the end of the tunnel. So it's that juxtaposition of respecting and validating and honoring and bearing witness to the darkness that we all experience at various times in our lives, while still reminding that person in their context of darkness that, you know, there also is light, there also is brightness, and that that's a very real, tangible possibility. If not in this moment, if not immediately in the future, then at some other future time. Because I believe that fundamentally, we all search for and long for that light. We're not wired to want to forever live in darkness. We want to be in the light. You know, that's how we literally and metaphorically continue to survive and thrive and grow as human beings. You know, exactly like beautiful plants and flowers that that lean towards the light. It's kind of one way that you can think about it, is that it's like we're almost biologically wired to want to lean towards the light. And there's no question that things happen in our lives that create that cloud of darkness. So, yes, it feels like somehow that sunlight is just gone. But we want to lean towards the light. And so even in those places of darkness, when we get reminded that there is sunshine, there is light, I really believe that that's where we want to head towards. We're wired for resiliency. And resiliency is the opposite of learned helplessness. And another very interesting thing that I've learned as I continue to read and learn about this phenomenon of post-traumatic growth, because I'm so intrigued by it and I'm so excited and I feel so hopeful about it, because it's, I think it's such a great way to work with people around their trauma. The literature does support this idea that the sooner a trauma survivor reports positive changes in their lives, the less likely they are to experience depression and full-blown PTSD symptoms. That's, again, not to say that people who reported positive changes did not experience distress, because they definitely still do, and they still did. And I want to keep reiterating the fact that post-traumatic growth does not mean that there's no struggle and there's no pain. But again, growth comes from the struggle itself. But if we can kind of keep on our radar screen that we want to track and monitor and look for instances of post-traumatic growth, just understand that the sooner we can bring people to that place, the more likely it is that we're helping them avoid landing in and getting stuck in post-traumatic stress disorder, which I just want to put out there, I think is such a wonderful, wonderful goal for all of us to hold and be mindful of, and that is, how can I slowly and gently begin to move a loved one, myself, my clients, my patients, towards this phenomenon of post-traumatic growth? But here's the thing that I think is a little bit hard to hear, but I think ethically I have to say it, that not everybody achieves post-traumatic growth. In fact, the last thing I want to do as a therapist is put that pressure on someone to think and to feel and to act in ways that are disingenuous or that are premature or truly don't resonate with the way that they're currently holding their trauma story. The truth is that there really are a lot of variables at play that are going to make the achievement of post-traumatic growth more or less attainable for people who have experienced profound trauma. And, you know, although I know that that's not the most hopeful thing to say, it's an honest thing for me to say that there is a percentage of people who don't achieve post-traumatic growth. Now, I don't know, you know, in a way, this is a new phenomenon that we're studying, and maybe it's more accurate to say the jury is out, and maybe we just need to look at these people over an even longer period of time. So maybe looking at the time frame in which the research is happening, we're not getting answers that substantiate a diagnosis of post-traumatic growth. But maybe if we revisited that person 2 years further down the road, 5 years further down the road, it's possible that they would be more on that path towards post-traumatic growth. But again, we're looking for people who kind of have a genetic profile that predisposes them towards getting to this endpoint that we're looking for. And just as a reminder of what I said earlier, we're looking for people who have the capacity to be optimistic, people who have the capacity to see the glass as half full. A lot of people are born that way. Not everybody is born that way. If you were not born that way, I guess the question becomes, can you be convinced that the glass can be perceived as half empty? Do you have an open-hearted and open-minded attitude that would allow for optimism to enter into the equation, so to speak? I want to emphasize again, though, that socioeconomic factors do play a role. And the more connected you are to resources, both resources that are emotional for support and concrete resources that can move you through your grieving, the availability of even something like a support group, for example. So the more access you have to those things, and sometimes, unfortunately, accessibility connects to socioeconomic status. So the more you have access to those things, the more likely it is that you're going to be able to walk down that path towards post-traumatic growth. So we're looking at genetic makeup, we're looking at resiliency, maybe we're even looking at how quickly you've bounced back from other events in the past. We're looking at access to resources for comfort and for support. We're looking at the extent to which you're willing to process it in therapy, because I think that there's no question that therapy is a major resource that can put somebody on that path towards post-traumatic growth. Because when you have access to a therapist, you have a cheerleader. You have somebody who's several steps ahead of you in the sense that they can see beyond where you are. They can see the light in the tunnel in a way that you can't. You are much further back in that tunnel when you first come into therapy, and that makes all the sense in the world that you would be. That has nothing to do with your therapist being better than you in any way. It's just the reality that your therapist can hold objectivity and some emotional distance from what you've been through, and therefore they can see the light in the tunnel in the way that would be difficult for you to. So obviously, I'm a very big proponent of therapy. I think it's a real gift in someone's life. And I think that as we look at this phenomenon of post-traumatic growth, we really have to consider the very strong possibility that the more somebody is willing to connect to therapeutic support, probably the more likely it is that they're going to be able to get to that place of post-traumatic growth. And in all honesty, I am usually the first one to point out to my clients when I see those glimmers, rather than it being something that they can easily identify. Once I introduce the concept to them and I go through the inventory with them, it's like something clicks and they get it. And at other times, it takes a lot more convincing before a client can truly identify and own the ways in which they have grown. It's almost easier for them to remain in a narrative of pain and helplessness because they've lived there for a long time. And maybe it's because it's familiar. I don't think it's because they're masochistic in any way. I just think for a lot of people, it's scary to trust that things could actually get better and stay better after living with so much pain. It's also possible that survivor guilt makes it hard for people to believe that they can be okay when perhaps others in their lives are not okay. And sometimes family members can all experience the same trauma and only some of them or one of them achieves a state of post-traumatic growth. So it's not something that every single member of a family will necessarily get to. I've definitely watched clients struggle with this concept at times, and yet when they really do connect with others and with a sense of a higher power, and when they can feel more compassionately towards themselves, and when they can take on feelings of being grateful about their lives, and they can embrace all of those things, then they do embrace the concept of post-traumatic growth. They get it. I've seen clients rise from depths that really, truly seemed unimaginable to ever surface from. Yet in time, they were able to rebound and profoundly enhance the quality of their lives and their relationships. So as we talk about this issue of post-traumatic growth, I hope that this is inspiring to you. I hope that you can also be inspired by some of my clients. A client who lost twins 4 hours after they were born. The client who grew up hiding in a closet with her sister to avoid beatings. The client who grew up desperately trying to cure her mother from her incapacitating depression and never being able to succeed with that. The client who watched his entire battalion die in front of him. The client who was repeatedly molested by a beloved family priest, and nobody in the family believed that he was being molested. The client whose entire family was murdered, the client who buried his wife and now prepares to bury his child, who is terminally ill, the client who was so overcome with panic and anxiety that he lost 3 jobs, the client diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer, the couple who's HIV positive, the client whose life was turned upside down when she bravely chose to be a whistleblower at work, the client who battled daily with an abusive ex-spouse advocating for her child's right to be safe. All of those brave, courageous people struggle and suffer. Believe me, they struggle and suffer. I am a witness to their pain on a weekly basis. And sometimes it feels like their pain knows no bounds. And yet, every one of them walks the path of post-traumatic growth, searching for new ways to make sense out of their experiences, holding on to newfound inner strength, holding on to those little glimmers of recognition that things really are on that path towards recovery and healing, struggling to believe in the goodness of others, and having moments of recognizing the goodness of a higher power. I watch them slowly, carefully, reaching out to others for support, rather than continuing to go it alone. Yeah, they take 2 steps forward, and then they take 1 step back, but they're always willing to keep walking down that path. And in their own way, unknowingly, they remind me on a daily basis that post-traumatic growth is possible. They remind me, of course, that all things are possible as I watch them navigate through their pain, struggle with their pain. And really, that's what this program is all about, reminding you that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, that you can overcome adversity and you can thrive. I want to close with one quick story. A client of mine who had been profoundly abused throughout her entire childhood and adolescence and even into her adult life just really, really, really suffered and did amazing work for years and years in therapy because it was a long-term struggle. She, at the end of her therapy with me, she brought in a beautiful painting that she had painted, and it was divided into 3 sections. And the top section was a caterpillar, and in the middle section was a cocoon, and the bottom section was a beautiful butterfly that she had painted. And I think it so magnificently speaks to the journey of post-traumatic growth. Another client of mine shared with me that one time she was watching the Discovery Channel and she learned that caterpillars can only transform into butterflies when they first go through this intense physiological struggle in their cocoons. It's only through the struggle that they emerge as butterflies. And I think that's really the message about post-traumatic growth, that we have to struggle. It is an inevitable part of life, but that we can be in that struggle, not be afraid of the struggle, because we can also hold on to the knowledge that through that struggle, we're going to emerge as butterflies, and we're going to be able to fly. I hope that that is some source of solace for those of you who are struggling. I hope it's a source of comfort. And for those of you who work with people who struggle, I hope you hold on to that as a source of hopefulness and optimism in your work. So thank you so much for joining me today. I know you have what it takes to take care of yourself. I want you to know that about yourself, too. Please join me next week when I'm going to be discussing women and addiction with a wonderful title called When Did One Glass of Wine Become a Bottle Every Night? With my special guest, Denise Tordella. Until then, take care of yourself and be well. And thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Inspire Journeys, Overcoming Adversity and Thriving. Please join Lisa Ferrance again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. May the next week be a positive, life-changing one for you. overcome and transcend trauma with guidance from Lisa Ferrance, president and founder of the Institute for Advanced Psychotherapy Training and Education, and author of the book, Treating Self-Destructive Behaviors in Trauma Survivors. Now in its third printing, Lisa Ferrance's book for clinicians offers creative treatment options, assessment tools, and new ways of understanding self-destructive behavior in trauma survivors. Trauma experts say,
Lisa Ferrance's book is a rare gift to clinicians.
Sound inventive approaches to help clients discover alternative ways to self-soothe.
And
far and away the best book written on this complex topic.
Order Lisa Ferrance's book online and receive a 20% discount by visiting www.lisaferrance.com. That's www.lisaferrance.com. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.